It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 7:09 in the Twin Cities, 26 degrees. Certainly in the business world, these are different times than it was a generation ago. People are switching jobs, switching careers. The ascent up the corporate ladder is no longer sort of a given in many companies and many corporations. And it can be especially difficult for women. Certainly we have seen a lot of discussion about the kinds of situations women face in the workplace. I've got a book for you that might give you some inspiration. It is called Grounded. It is Leading Your Life with Intention. The author is Nancy Dahl. She has had a very distinguished career as an executive in a number of corporations, and she is joining us now to talk about her book and living your life with intention and success in the corporate world, success in the personal world. Thank you so much, Nancy Dahl, for coming on.
Thank you, Esme. I'm honored to be with you tonight.
Absolutely. Well, tell us, you had a blog. Tell us about your corporate background, because you really have held top-level positions at a number of very important companies here.
Yeah, thanks, Esme. Yeah, I've been in the worked with a number of great organizations in the Twin Cities. Started my career at Minnesota Mutual Life Insurance. Spent some time at Nordic, where most of my career has been at LifeTouch. I was the first woman president there and actually ran two divisions. Spent some time at Cambria, and I'm currently at Tastefully Simple. So leadership is something that I love to do. Leading people is something that I think is really fun, and getting everybody going in the same direction can be challenging, but it's also a very rewarding career.
All right. You had a blog, and you know, people basically said, you know, hey, Nancy, I mean, this is good. We need your help. You know, put it in a book. I mean, is that sort of the genesis of this book? And again, the book is called Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention.
Yeah, my blog, Lead Your Life, started in 2014 as sort of an experiment, Esme, to talk about some of the dilemmas that leaders face in just a bite-sized pieces, if you will. And that led to a greater audience than the organizations that I was leading, and a lot of conversation about what would be helpful for leaders, and an ongoing course for me to say, why don't you write this down? Why don't you write this down beyond the blog? Because as you know, a blog of 400 to 800 words is very different than a book that's about 80,000 words.
Right. And in terms of the sort of the essence of leadership, you know, this is sort of things are changing so quickly in terms of the business world, in terms of everything, you know, social media, different kinds of goals, you know, the economy, the international economy. What are some of the keys that you think that you've been able to harness and achieve success in the fields, in the disparate fields that you've been in?
Yeah, I think that the world we live in today is a one-way ticket to faster. You know, we say, gosh, it's going so quick. And I think we're going to look back and think that this is actually, we remember how slow it was at one time. And therein lies the essence of the value of this book to anyone, male, female, regardless of your ethnic background, is about how to learn what your best gifts are, how to leverage those for life, not just a certain period of time, and then how to advocate for what you need to be healthy. And therein lies from the pace of the world, I think we need to learn to take breaks. I think we need to learn to give ourselves time to recharge in order to be our best self every day. And so that's really what the book talks about, is how to get to know yourself for life, how to be curious every day about how to live your best life, if you will, and then how to advocate for what you really need, whether you're 28 or whether you're 75.
You know, one of the things I thought was interesting you talked about in the book is, you know, when you had employees coming to complain to you or being angry or upset. And you know, there are certainly at every level, especially if you work in a big corporation or a big newsroom, there are always tensions. And you actually focused on, you know, talking about sitting in the other chair, which I think is a really interesting perspective. So I think people who are successful, I think, are ones that are able to channel what you're talking about here. Explain that.
Yeah, I think that one of the key pieces to really be your best as a leadership, often people will come to me and say, I want to do what you're doing. I want this leadership life that you have. And I would do the work with them and talk with them because I'm really passionate about helping people get there. And I would find that they hadn't done the work on themselves first. So they didn't know how to lead themselves, let alone lead others. And part of learning to lead yourself is to learn to be self-aware enough to understand perspectives from another person's chair. And that's what sitting in the other chair talks about, is can you understand their perspective the way they understand it so that you as a leader can engage with them where they are and actually help them move along and in some cases take that feedback and refine your leadership to take the organization in a different place.
And is that something, and we're chatting with Nancy Dahl, she has written a book called Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention. She has held executive positions at a number of prominent companies around the Twin Cities area, and it's a book about, you know, leadership and getting to the leadership position that you want to get to, but also how to do it in sort of the way that you have been so successful in, Nancy. Isn't that issue, though, of being able to put yourself in the other chair? And I love that expression, by the way. I think it's kind of, I've never heard it put that way, but I really like that. Isn't that really the key to any kind of success?
It is. It is, because I think, you know, leadership, particularly when you get to a C-suite position, is a very lonely chair, and it's very easy to get isolated.
And explain the C-suite.
Well, C-suite would be a CEO position, a COO position, a CMO, a CIO, anyone that's in the top position of the function or a top position of the organization. So, you know, it might be a president. That might be a term that most people are familiar with. But it's the top leader. And that's a very lonely chair. Some of the things you want to talk about, you can't talk to other people about. And it's easy to get isolated. And so when you have to work at staying connected to the front line, you have to worry and stay connected with what really matters in the business. Because if you just fly at the 200,000-foot lookup in any organization, you're going to become irrelevant really quickly. And I think that's really the challenge a leader faces, is how do I represent what's important for my organization by working with the people that are in the organization, meeting them where they are, so you can take them to new places.
And is there, I would imagine, that the people who don't do that can't stay in those C-suite positions very long, because if they don't understand what's going on the front lines, if they're not grounded enough, as to use your title, they're going to miss what's actually happening with their company. And if there's a problem, that's not going to, you know, help the company at all.
Correct. That's exactly what's going to happen. When people are not in tune with who they are and the people around them know more about how that person behaves, the people around them start to manage the leader. And so the leader's tenure in an organization is going to be very short term.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, because they just aren't in tune, to your point, about the things that need to happen at the time. And so their actions and decisions aren't real time. And so they won't be there very long.
In terms of leadership, one of the things you write about is letting people in an organization understand how important they are and how valued they are. And I really do feel that sometimes some people who are in those positions can't do that. They just somehow are incapable of it. You write about that. I mean, how big a problem can that be?
I think it's a huge problem, quite frankly. I think that, you know, a lot of times people will ascend to a leadership position and really not be in tune with who they are. And they have an insecurity, and they have this perspective that being a leader is really about knowing all the answers. And I think it's frankly about knowing how to ask the question and being curious enough to discover the next new thing or the next issue, or really grapple with something that maybe you frankly don't want to hear, but you need to hear. And so I think it's a crisis, frankly, Esme, in the leadership where people don't do their own work. They aren't in tune. They think leadership is about serving them versus serving others. And then it does both them, their career, as well as the organizations they serve, an injustice. You don't really get to optimize the opportunity that's in front of you.
The book is Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention by Nancy Dahl. What's been some of the reactions you've gotten to the book? Because it just, basically just came out.
Right, it did. We launched it on Tuesday, and I would tell you I've done two major launch parties, one in Minneapolis at the Barnes & Noble and Galleria, and the other one in Sioux Falls. They were both sellout crowds. I was glad I had my own inventory for both items because I had extra boxes in my car, and we sold out of everything I had as well as everything the stores had ordered. And so it was really a fun response in both cases to the book, and lots of really exciting conversations. And, you know, the common question is, of course, why did you write the book? You know, that's the one you get first. And it's really about my passion for helping people be their best self for life, not just for this moment, but for life. And how do they make sure that their impact is as good as it can be? That would be the first thing. And then the second thing I think is really key is how do you, as a leader, fuel curiosity in people? Because I think that the world would love to kill curiosity, would love to just make us all the same. And it's more efficient that way. It works faster that way. But there's not a lot unless we as leaders give space to ask a question that lets us discover something new. And so that was really my impetus for the book, is that if I could help one person discover some new insight about themselves that would allow them to have a new perspective on their future, the book was worthwhile.
And let me ask you, you have not written this as a book on advice or your perspective as a woman, but people are going to see it that way because you are a woman and you have been so successful. Is it different for a woman? And how so? Do they have to kind of just be that much better or that much more empathetic or that much more understanding of what their workers are doing?
Yeah, I think that here's how I would answer that question. I think that the future is about embracing diversity as a point of strength, not a point of weakness. And we can put whatever label you want it. You can say, well, here's a book written by a woman, so it's about women leaders. You could say, you know, you're this ethnic diversity or you're this or that or the other thing. And I think as you saw in the book, there are, you know, I think it's more about behavior. It's more about engagement. It's more about style. But we love to put a label on it. So the book, interestingly enough, so I have two boys. And so I'm a tomboy by nature, spend my life, you know, hunting and fishing and four-wheeling and motorcycling. And that's really where I love to spend my time. And so when I wrote the book, I wanted to make certain that it was a broad-based book, not just a view from one perspective. And the response I've gotten actually has been equally as engaging. My beta readers were ages 28 to 60. So my endorsement folks were about 28 to about 75, both male and female. And both of them took away their own perspective of the same story, which for me was huge success because I didn't want this book to be categorized as, you know, a woman's leadership book or this or that. I wanted it to be a broad-based audience approach, which is really the response I'm getting.
Nancy Dahl is the author of the book Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention. She is has served as, you know, amongst many other corporate titles, the president COO for two Life Touch divisions. When you and currently COO of Tastefully Simple, is there, when you look back at your career, you know, which you've obviously had so much success, quote, in the C-suite, is there one thing that you remember not knowing when you were just starting out that is just sort of essential? I mean, is there any one thing that's kind of surprised you in the journey, if that question makes any sense at all?
Yeah, it does make sense. I think the one thing I would say is to have the courage in who you are and what you represent and have the courage to really throw your power ball all day long versus try to fit into the places that you've been.
Interesting.
You know, I think as I join different organizations, you try to fit into what they are. And I think the real power play is to understand who you are and what point of difference you bring to the organization and learn how to work with the organization to allow you to do what you do best and them to do what they do best. But together, it's sort of one and one is three.
Right.
you can do more together by working together. And I think it's about having the confidence and never losing the confidence in that power play.
All right. Fascinating advice. Nancy Dahl, the book Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention. I assume it's available everywhere now.
It is. You can get it on Amazon. Barnes & Noble has it. It's just been really fun this week to launch this book and, like I said, to sell out crowds. So it's been really fun.
All right. Well, congratulations, Nancy Dahl, on the success of the book, and a great pleasure to talk with you this evening.
Thanks, Esme.
Okay, take care. Again, the book Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention by Nancy Dahl, available everywhere books are sold. All right, folks, much more ahead on this Saturday evening. We do have to take a break. We have one of the nation's really leading experts on ISIS coming up. Also, Professor David Schultz at 8 o'clock. Obviously, a lot going on in the world of politics. Certainly, the burgeoning scandal of sexual harassment, both at the state capitol, also, in the nation's capital, the allegations against Al Franken sort of coming, really bursting onto the scene this past week. We'll chat with Professor David Schultz about all of that. So let's take a quick break. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. It is 7:28 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Coming up, we'll give you a little bit of the weather forecast leading into this. I guess it's sort of a holiday week. I think most people are certainly fortunate enough to have Thanksgiving off. I think a lot of people have that Friday off as well. Certainly kids are off of school. It is a lot going on this week, sort of the start of the big holiday shopping season. So we'll get that forecast for you. Coming up, we'll also visit with really one of the nation's leading experts, Tom Gutierrez, on the latest on ISIS. This is really, as they go through these lands that ISIS once controlled, they are finding mass graves. It is a devastating situation. And the effort to rebuild that area is one that is precarious at best. And if it's not done right, as we have found tragically a number of times for the past few decades, these other radical forces can emerge. This is something that needs to be done right. And I'll be interested to get his perspective as well. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, David Schultz. I have not talked to him on this issue of the sexual harassment scandal, both at the Minnesota State Capitol, also at, with United States Senator Al Franken, accused this week of groping somebody and taking a picture that was inappropriate. I have not talked to Professor Schultz about that. It'll be interesting to get his perspective as well. I do want to invite you to tune in to WCCO TV Sunday morning, 6 a.m., 10:30 a.m., on our 10:30 a.m. guests will include, and we'll have them on together, and I'm really very honored that these two women, because I do think they're heroes in all this, Representative Erin May Quaid and Representative Lori Halverson, who were two of the first women at the Minnesota State Capitol to say publicly, here I am, and I have been a victim of sexual harassment. And it'll be interesting to hear kind of the kinds of reaction they've gotten, what they would like to see going forward. One thing that's really just kind of shocked me in all this is the fact that in these political spheres, there is not sexual harassment training for people at the Capitol. I mean, how can that be? And maybe it's because I work for a large corporation, CBS, where we have it every 6 months. We sit down and we all sort of grumble a little bit about it, but we've been doing it for years, and it's about an hour that you have to go through every 6 months, a video thing. You've got to take the training. You got to pass the test. We'll talk to David Schultz about that. Also tomorrow on WCCO, 10:30 a.m., Mayor-elect Melvin Carter of St. Paul. I think it's really so cool that both Minneapolis and St. Paul have these new mayors that are young and fresh and exciting, and they seem to have so much energy. And I look forward to meeting and interviewing Mayor-elect Melvin Carter of St. Paul. So let's take a quick break. Let's give you that promised weather forecast. And then when we come back, we'll chat with Tom Gutierrez from the University of Nebraska, Omaha, about the latest when it comes to ISIS.
Radio.com.
It is 7:36 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. 26 degrees out there. Well, obviously a lot going on in the world politically, internationally. One of the things that I have followed for a long time, often involving allegations of terror recruitment here in the Twin Cities is the status of ISIS. And I think most people who've been following the news realize that ISIS has been defeated. They have been forced to flee from large areas of territory, the nation really that they once held, the cities they once held. And left behind are devastating images that we've seen. I saw just a story today about the search for mass graves, people trying to find out where hundreds, thousands are buried. But these folks, yes, they have been defeated. Many have surrendered, but there's also evidence that this group is not going away, that they will probably return to sort of their guerrilla roots and continue to provide, attacks and insurgencies in this area. And there are a lot of questions about what will emerge in the aftermath of this defeat. In the past few decades, we have seen what happens after defeats of certain groups. The vacuum that has left often is more dangerous than that which came before, leading to even more radicalization, even more terror, and even more difficulties in trying to figure out if there's a way to try and stabilize this entire area. Thomas Gutierrez is really one of the leading experts in the nation on ISIS and Afghanistan and is kind enough to join us now on the show. He is, of course, with the University of Nebraska, Omaha. Thank you so much for coming on.
Good to be with you again, Esme.
All right, absolutely. And I've certainly enjoyed your perspective in the past. All right, so people here are reading about, Raqqa falling, these other cities falling. What is the status of ISIS right now?
Well, I think you did a good job of kind of summarizing its situation. I think the primary concern that we must all have now is, as you suggested, what will it become and how will it manifest itself from this point onward? And most people right now are noting that, and I think particular analysts who have been checking it on ISIS and its other worldwide locations have been seeing how it is focusing more in areas, as you suggest, where it can go back to its kind of guerrilla roots. The other thing that I think is very important here is that elements within ISIS are going to be combining with elements of what seems to be a kind of a rejuvenated Al-Qaeda network. And that just as ISIS kind of split off from Al-Qaeda, there will be parts of ISIS that will maybe reemerge and re-collaborate. And we're seeing that particularly in the African area, in Nigeria, Niger, Mali. And so that will be the place most people are suggesting will be the training grounds for much of what will become the future makeup of whether it's ISIS or the rejuvenated Al-Qaeda or a combination and whatever.
So basically, you're one of the experts saying they aren't done.
No, they're not done. They've been beaten and they've been badly bruised and beaten in Iraq and Syria. But what has happened is that the structure, which was probably too ambitious for an organization like ISIS. In other words, an organization like ISIS functions best when it's not able to be targeted. What it did by setting itself up in a structure, in a state, as it called itself, it enabled it to be targeted. And in the long run, it did not have the capacity to manage the state that it created, unable to deliver to the citizens living there what they wanted, and therefore it kind of in many ways imploded in addition to suffering from the attacks from the finally combined efforts that were directed towards it in both Iraq and Syria. And even though those weren't perfectly coordinated, they were sufficient enough, along with its own inherent weakness as a structured state. Now it will, I think, reemerge those within it, those subscribing to the Al-Qaeda narrative, will regroup in other places. And that's the thing we're going to have to be looking for. They won't go away. They have their masters at using the internet to find others to join with them, disaffected, dysfunctional folks. So we're going to have to refocus our intelligence on tracing their new movements in new form.
All right. Let me ask you this. I mean, one of the things you read about these mass arrests, and one of the things I think people sort of forget is the leader of ISIS, who I guess we're not sure if he's alive or not. Maybe you have a theory on that. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi wasn't he in a U.S. prison in Iraq and then got out and became even more radicalized and led this, really led ISIS, for many years. I mean, when we talk about, see these mass arrests and people being incarcerated, are people handling that correctly? So there's not a new radicalization that emerges from those who are being imprisoned for their role in ISIS?
Well, you raise a very pertinent point, and that has a lot to do with the relationship in Iraq and in Syria between Shia and Sunni elements in both countries. In Iraq, the majority of the population is Sunni, and of course, is Shia, and ISIS is of Sunni roots. In Syria, the majority of the population is Sunni, but the government is Shia. So you have these kind of this competition between Shia Sunni, which is exacerbated by the radical approach to managing each side by the Saudis on the one hand with the Sunnis and the Shia by Iran. And so there's this competition there that exacerbates the whole environment. And so now will the Shia dominating state of Iraq welcome Sunni Iraqis back into the fold,
former ISIS?
That's right. Some can be, some might not be. There are a lot of Iraqis who went with, or at least stayed in the territory where the ISIS state was constructed because they felt very ill at ease in a Shia-dominated state that was not treating them with any form of equality. And similarly, there's Syria is even more complicated, and it would take two shows to go into that.
Right.
But it's a similar kind of thing where this competition is exacerbated. So this is the important thing. Can there be some kind of accommodation between Shia Sunni elements in that region? And in the past, it has not, come forth.
Well, how about Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi? Do you think he's alive?
I don't know. I'm starting to doubt it. But then again, a lot of people were doubting whether or not Osama bin Laden was alive as well until he was captured. So, I think the Russians believe that they got him. But I think our intelligence sources, American intelligence sources, have stated they don't think that is the case. So he hasn't been seen, though, in a long time. And so his effectiveness as a leader will now have to be resurrected in a new form other than the one that he, was so visible in as the head of this Islamic state. But it wouldn't be surprising to me if indeed he did appear alive somewhere. But, you've got to remember that the Al-Qaeda and ISIS wings of this whole extremist, radicalized element of the Islamist, believers, are not getting along with each other and didn't, and were fighting each other, in particular in Syria, and they're doing the same thing to some degree in Afghanistan, and so they are competitive with each other. The thing I think that we need to watch is whether or not there will be an accommodation between the kind of rejuvenated Al Qaeda and the elements of ISIS that remain fleeing here and there and trying to find new territory in which they can function.
All right. We are chatting right now with Thomas Gutierrez from the University of Nebraska, Omaha. He's one of the world's leading experts on ISIS and Afghanistan. Tom, we have to take a quick break here. When we come back, I'd like to ask you to help us clarify or understand the U.S.'s role here. You mentioned Niger. Certainly, we all saw the tragedy of those American soldiers being captured and killed there, and it was obvious or came out later that their mission was not exactly what we had once thought and that they were trying to snuff out or find some radical elements there. But we do have to take a quick break. We want to let you know that right now the WCCO time check is 747. Certified McCarthy's Cadillac now up to 40% off of MSRP. Shop McCarthyAuto.com, McCarthyAuto.com. More with Tom Gutierrez after this on News Radio 830 WCCO. 751 in the Twin Cities. We are chatting with Thomas Gutierrez with the University of Nebraska, Omaha, one of the nation's leading experts on ISIS. Let me ask you, what exactly is the U.S. doing, in this aftermath of the collapse of the official nation that was ISIS? To what are we just there in an advisory effort? I mean, it sounds like, especially with that Niger raid, that those soldiers tragically died and those U.S. soldiers, they were doing a little more than what was originally stated. Help us out here.
Well, some of this obviously remains still for us to learn in terms of what our policy is. But it appears that we're trying to anticipate where ISIS and elements of Al-Qaeda are reforming or gaining strength or seeking to gain strength. ISIS and Al-Qaeda have always been very, very successful in attaching themselves or their organizations to groups that were struggling against a state or other groups in tribal conflict or religious conflict. And so if a group is able to obtain the resources that an ISIS or an Al-Qaeda can bring to the table in these situations, then usually the group that comes in, like ISIS or Al-Qaeda, becomes more the group than the group that it joined with. And in other words, it becomes the real danger. And this is what we saw in particular in northern Nigeria with all the headlines that we would see about the kidnapped girls and forced marriages, etc. And in Niger, there is that same type of thing. There's a lot of different linguistic, ethnic, tribal, and some religious conflicts in that region. And so the objective of ISIS and Al-Qaeda is to attach themselves to such groups like that and then kind of take them over and run the battle and use those regions for training and spreading the narrative again. They have to have a base from which they can convey the narrative on the internet and in other ways in which they get it out. So I think what we're trying to do is to anticipate and cut this off at the pass, so to speak.
To prevent another ISIS from rising from the ashes.
That's right. And, the degree to which we will be successful, we'll just have to be seen. And it appears that was the mission of these individuals, group, or of the military section that they belong to, those who got killed. So,
right. And in terms of what the world can expect, do you think we will continue to see whether it's lone wolf attacks, perhaps some that are more coordinated in the name of ISIS? I mean, is that going to continue to happen? Because it certainly sounds like that's likely.
Well, I hate to say yes, but I think we have to expect that. I think that We need to anticipate that that is going to be the way that ISIS and Al-Qaeda, rejuvenated Al-Qaeda, are going to function. And we just need to anticipate that because we need to be out in front of it to see what we can do to preclude it from happening. And, you know, one just doesn't know how many defeats of the kind that they've had in Iraq and Syria to their state structure ISIS and Al-Qaeda need to have, how many leaders need to be eliminated, like Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, whether he's dead or alive, I don't know, and Osama bin Laden. There's still Zawahiri out there somewhere, who, you know, is number two in Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda's son as well as, I mean, Osama bin Laden's son as well as now taking a leadership role in Al-Qaeda. So these things are not going away, and there are elements to which they seem to have, for which they seem to have an attraction. And we just, you know, I think the biggest part of the war now, Esme, is got to be intelligence. Mm-hmm. And knowing where to sure. strike against them reforming.
All right. Well, listen, Tom Gutierrez, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your insights this evening.
Thank you, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. You too, sir. All right, Thomas Gutierrez.
Bye-bye.
The not-so-subtle message that ISIS may be defeated, but it is not vanquished, that they are likely to try and rise again, and certainly we should all be on the alert and wary, both on an individual level and also certainly at a national level, an international level, about the threat that remains from this group and this organization. All right, folks, much more ahead. Coming up next, Professor David Schultz will break down the sexual harassment scandals.